Hey everyone, welcome to a new episode of B2B Marketing Done Right. Today I'm speaking with Erin McGann. She's a senior content strategist at the S&P Group. And we're going to talk about the importance of a journalistic content approach and how to work with your subject matter experts to create some awesome content for your audience. I'm excited for this one, so let's dive right in. Erin, welcome to the show.
Thanks. I'm really happy to be here. It's quite cool.
Brilliant. So maybe to set the scene for this conversation, can you tell us a little bit about S&P Group and your role there?
S&P Group is an international B2B software and services company. We look after companies who are working on large data migration and management projects in the SAP ecosystem. Our job as marketers here, and my job in particular as a senior content strategist, is figuring out the best way to communicate our value to our customers.
Brilliant. Love that. And I'm so excited to dive into today's topic. It's something that I talk about a lot, both on LinkedIn and with my clients, which is how can we use a journalistic approach for content creation, right? I know you're big on this. I also know that the company is big on this. So let's talk about it because, I mean, we hear all this stuff about AI taking over the world. My grandma can now publish a 2,000-word article at a click of a button. So why do you think marketing teams should opt for a more journalistic approach when it comes to creating their content instead of churning out AI-generated content at lightning speed?
I think it really comes down to knowing your audience well and having this editorial mindset and making your content interesting to them. When you create content that reads like a magazine or a newspaper article, it just goes into your audience heads without friction. They're really used to taking in information this way and reputable information. It's generally a more interesting way to talk about your products and services because it usually forces you to take a more audience-centric view of it, or it should. You're telling a story in a journalistic style, so you're going to be emphasizing things like whether it's timely, whether it's relevant, connection to larger industry news cycle, which of course makes it more compelling for your customers as well. And selfishly, I find it much more interesting to write and research.
So absolutely.
I think when you approach things this way, you really have to look into what is new. Why should we care about this right now? And that always creates better content.
I think making the audience the star of the show in that case is so important. And also when it comes to that editorial mindset. And from my work with marketing teams, I often see that specific foundation, knowing your audience well, is something that a lot of companies don't have in place, I would say, because they are just so focused on the production side of things. What would you advise marketing teams when it comes to customer research and really making your buyer the star of your content?
I understand that, especially with smaller content teams, it can be challenging to get really good customer research in. It's expensive to do, but there are ways to do a little bit of this on your own. Something that I do is every quarter, in the first part of the quarter, I talk to a range of salespeople in different regions. And I ask them things like, what are the objections you're hearing over and over again? What questions have you had to answer like every time? What is the customer story you just keep hearing from people? What do you wish you didn't have to write out an email, or what do you wish you didn't have to explain every time? And that will give you a bit of a window into some pain points and some concerns that your customers have. I often like to talk to mid to lower level salespeople as well, because senior sales folks, they have a customer base, they have a book, they're talking to similar people over and over again. Juniors and mid-level, they are like out there working all the leads. So they have had many conversations and they will have some insights that you might not have. For instance, this last round, I heard that there was some confusion about some of our certifications and that it was something they had to explain often. How do they fit in? How do they work? What is exactly certified? I never would have known that had I not gone through this exercise. And it might not inform a giant piece of content. Like you might not get in, you know, the subject of your next white paper, but for instance, hearing the kind of phrases and problems customers were having informed some of the copy I wrote for an email nurturing campaign. So because I was speaking directly to customers, I could really take on board that I kept hearing, we're hearing from senior IT leads, they don't have enough staff, they don't have enough people with enough knowledge in the team already, kind of thing. So that allowed me to use that as a way to approach some copy. You're taking in all these pieces, and part of your job as a content marketer is making connections between disparate pieces of information from other parts of the organization and making that all come together in one. So that can sometimes inform your larger picture of a customer story and write them out yourself. I mean, there's loads of persona templates out there on the internet, and poke around, see what fits, have unofficial conversations with, you know, partner managers or pre-sales or whatever. I understand sometimes we're just not in the position to do things like commission user research. So use all the tools at your disposal. Also, write it out and update it. Like, it's not, these things will change over time. So the more you hear pieces that landed really well, that should go back into it and think about what, you know, what messages were really landing with your customers. If you ever get the chance, try and sit in on sales calls so you can hear, but I know that can also be challenging. So, you know, work with what you've got. And I'm a big fan of talking to everybody I can in my organization at all different levels. Support can be another really great source if you can get in there. Don't feel you need to be stuck with the traditional, I need user research. Just use your journalistic brain and go wander around and talk to people about what they're hearing, what's working and what's not.
I just love that. And it's such a practical approach, because often, I mean, as marketers, we like to overcomplicate things, right?
Yeah.
And I think looking inside your organization just helps tremendously in picking up those conversations that are happening with your customers, with your prospects. I really love that approach. And how frequently would you do that? Do you have like a structure for that? What does that look like?
Generally, I'm constantly building it up. I sort of started with one salesperson that I met that I really connected with at a kickoff event, and he was based in Switzerland. And I knew I really needed to broaden my understanding of how different regions were talking to customers, because our customer base in Central Europe is really huge. But at the same time, we do have regional sales folks in North America, in the UK, in Asia, and I know I'm not getting the full story. So I started with him and had a conversation, and it was really helpful. So now at the beginning of the quarter, because they're less busy, I will have 45 minutes to an hour to talk, and I give them an overview at the beginning, like, this is what I want to hear from you, because I know they're busy. I have varied success on how much they prepare ahead of time. One guy had like pulled his whole team and had like a collected feedback, and I was like, you win the gold star. But not always. But I mean, even off the cuff conversations can be super helpful, because sometimes if they don't think too hard about it, it's also useful, because you're getting what's top of mind. But I do have to emphasize that there's another half to this, and that is you really being unapologetic about looking at each of these things that you want to do, pieces of content, topics, and say, so what? You know, like really thinking, would someone outside the organization really care about this? Because, and the longer you work somewhere, the harder this is. So you really have to practice and be super conscious. You know, for an internal person, something might be really exciting, but if you really question whether that means anything to anyone externally, sometimes not. By the same token, sometimes things that we don't think about much could be really interesting for a customer. Like if you can find a hook, for instance, something I'm working on right now is a lot of our products and services help customers get prepared for using AI models and machine learning with their data. And that is new. And so we can sort of look at some of the things, some of our product features and whatnot in a new light, because it relates to something that's happening in the industry. So you need to sort of be aware of the outside world as well as inside journalistic practices. So you're sort of constantly looking for how is this relating to what's going on in the world? How is this new? Is it really interesting to someone else? Or is it just interesting internally? I encourage you not to tell your subject matter experts that it's not interesting externally. They sometimes take it very personally, which is 100% fair. I mean, this is my job. That's not their job. So they need to care and be super excited about everything. And I'm thrilled that they are.
Super interesting insights. And why do you think that companies have a hard time really understanding what their audience wants in their content? Because from my work with clients, we often see that when we come in, there is a lot of inside-out content, as I call it. So it's just super focused on pushing features, pushing benefits. Hey, we have introduced this new product or service. Let's talk about it and promote it. There seems to be a disconnect between what the audience actually wants and what you're giving them with your content. Why is that, do you think?
I think you really have to have concentrated on having this outside-in perspective to make it happen and to make those connections. And to be fair, for the experts in your organization, that's often not part of their job. So why would they think that way? They're being paid to focus extremely on the problem in front of them and how it fits into the organization and whatnot. So it's totally understandable that they're not going to be able to make that kind of connection, but that's what you're there for. But realistically, sometimes senior leadership doesn't always understand that you need to make that connection. I mean, I'm really lucky in that when I explain why I've come at something a certain way, my senior leadership really gets it quite quickly. It's totally fine. But I have worked other places where that takes a bit more work. But I think just takes a little, I almost think of it as a physical cube that I have to turn around, you know, to see the other side. And sometimes that works for some people. To a certain extent, internal folks, this is their baby and they don't like hearing that it's not important, but I never say it that way. I look for the angle that's interesting because often you can find one. It's not like it's wholly uninteresting. If you talk to an expert long enough, you will find it, whether it's like, tell me about the most unusual use case you've heard someone using this for. You know, that is an outlier, which is another way of finding an interesting angle, right? What is the biggest volume of data we've ever used our product for that you know of, kind of thing? What was the hardest project? What took the longest or the shortest amount of time? What really surprised you? Just digging around, looking for something that is different. Even saying, can you tell me about like, what does a customer do with this? What does it allow them to do? And often, especially dealing with tech folks in engineering and development, they are very focused on the thing they're building and the use case it's delivering on. But often the story you want to tell is about two steps down the line because you're trying to, I'm always telling my product team, you got to sell the dream. It's not just the thing that they're going to do, but the thing that allows them to do. That's not part of their job remit. So that's your job to find the dream around it. Some people can get on board with you with that and some people can't. And that's fine. I mean, you just get them to tell you stories and just keep asking questions. How do customers do this? Why? Another favorite question of mine is, at what point does a customer realize they need our product or service? Like, what has happened that they went, we can't do this ourselves?
Yeah.
You know, like what's going on when that happens? Those are all stories that a customer will relate to and still involves the features and benefits that your product people want you to talk about. It may take a little bit of internal marketing to prove that this approach works, but almost always when they see the end product, they go, oh, okay, now I get it. And that's just another factor of they are not marketers, so they're not going to understand this process. And that's okay. And I think it's unfair to expect them to understand that because they have a whole other field that they work in that I don't know how to do data science. I don't know how to develop these products. I don't code. I respect their knowledge and don't expect them to understand what I'm trying to do or why.
Oh, I love that. I think it's an approach that a lot of companies would benefit from. So I'm also curious to hear, because we talked about finding the most interesting angles for a topic. What I often see happening is that companies are just so focused on production, ticking off the to-dos in the editorial calendar, that they actually forget to ask themselves, like, hey, what is the most interesting angle and what's the so what for this particular piece? You've talked about it a bit. I'm curious to hear, is there any process that you use before you start working on a content piece to get the best out of it?
Definitely. The way I'm going to explain it probably makes it sound like it takes me 3 days. It doesn't have to. It can take an hour, you know what I mean? But often when you explain it out, it sounds long. I often do sort of two streams at once. And if I know we have to cover a specific topic, I will sit down, even without talking to someone, imagine what is happening to bring a customer to this point, which is something I mentioned before, but like visualize what is going on, what are the jobs they're doing. And I'm not just talking about the jobs to be done thing that we talk about in content marketing, but just like really think about what is their process, what's happening, who's asked them to do this? Like, is it their manager? Is it like someone way up there? What happens if they don't do it or they do it wrong? What happens if they do it well? And like, who will praise them for it? And if I don't know the answers to these, I will go back to my people, like product managers or pre-sales or sales folks. My colleagues are really used to me popping up in Teams going, so asking really random questions. What happens if, how would you say this? What happens if a customer doesn't do this right? You know, they're used to me now. I look through all that and write it out.
Why do you think that that's an important part?
It gives me the context a customer is approaching this problem with. So sometimes we get so into our own product and portfolio that it's like it's happening in a vacuum and it's not. So like, what else is going on here that could impact this decision somehow on a customer side? What kind of like headspace are they in? What is the tone of voice we're approaching them with that would be engaging? Is it like, oh, this is tedious. We all know it's tedious. This is an easier way to do it. You know what I mean? Or is it, oh my God, this is overwhelming. We make a thing that generates a roadmap for you. You know, like what is happening that is stressful or difficult about this? What are the feelings you would have about it? Which sounds so groovy, but really just like bullet points. It doesn't need to be like a whole story unless that works for you. It really helps if you have some really robust personas in place for this as well. But even if not, you can still manage this. And then the second thing I do is I look at what and who I have access to around this topic. This is particularly useful if I'm trying to decide how we're going to do it. Like, is this going to be a report? Is this going to be a video? What are we going to do? So, I mean, realistically, we don't want to reinvent the wheel with everything we do, right? So that's not useful. And, you know, often in small content teams, it's not even possible. So I sort of dig around on what I have. Like, do I have clips from a webinar? Do I have data we've commissioned before? Do I have, like, does our data science team have anything on this? Are there other pieces of content I can repurpose? Did we get one of our experts to write a blog post like 6 months ago? That kind of thing. So I sort of dig around and see what I've got. And then from there, I kind of think, okay, well, we could repurpose part of this blog post and this other piece. And then I think I could make something about a bit of research and we could probably make it 5 pages or something to download. If I have some video stuff, I might then go, well, maybe we take a presentation in this part of this webinar and then plug it in with some B-roll and that will make kind of a cool video. It does depend a little bit what the approach would work, but often it's really just about what we have and what would make it compelling, really, and interesting. I don't like forcing something into a format when I think, oh, well, we need to do a video, so this is going to be a video. It's like, well, that doesn't really solve anything. So
Yeah, because also that's an interesting one, right? Because a lot of marketing teams are deciding like, hey, are we going to go for articles? Are we going to go for a white paper, videos? I mean, there are endless content formats that they can choose from, right? What is your approach for selecting the right format for the right goal?
It's a bit of a combination between what we realistically can execute on. As a senior content strategist, I'm also thinking about scalability. So I don't want to do this crazy awesome video knowing we could never manage this again. You know what I mean? So especially if it does well, then where are we? So
you have a hard job.
Yeah, exactly. Like, well, that doesn't do anyone any favors, right? So I sort of think of it from a strategic point of view, like what would be good? We talk about like, can we reuse things better? So often trying to build that into the beginning part of a content production cycle. So like if we do this webinar, do we think, can we get licensed to use clips on socials if we like, if we're using a customer or whatever? We do a big in-person event every year that's like over 1,000 attendees in person, and 2 to 3 days of like live talks with customers on stage, and we film it professionally. So just trying to figure out how we can use that content after the fact in the best way. I like to keep it really open because it's sort of, it's really depending on who, what skills you have in your team. I agree. Sometimes it would be great to do a video on this, but the reality is you don't have the resources. So I think it's what you can deliver on in the best way and repeatably, really, because otherwise, like, I don't really think there's much point in trying to do something differently every single time and having to come up with a team to do it or a process to do it. Like, it just doesn't make sense. So it's better to figure out how can we do this well more than once.
Yeah. And also probably based on what has worked in the past, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Love that. We touched upon this briefly already, but I know that you're big on interviewing your subject matter experts, right? Yeah. Whether it's sales team to get a good grasp of what's happening in those customer and prospect conversations, but also interviewing internal subject matter experts when it comes to actually creating different thought pieces. Mm-hmm. So we often hear and we often see that a lot of companies say like, hey, we have a lot of expertise in the company, but it's locked in the minds of our experts, right? So really curious to hear your approach and your top tips maybe for collaborating with your internal experts to create that kind of journalistic thought leadership content.
I think building relationships within your organization is key. So if you're in-house and you can, trying to build up a rapport with them ahead of time is excellent. Also, just being aware and open, who is good on camera, who's a really good speaker and is super comfortable presenting. Like, for instance, this, our salesperson in Switzerland, he does a radio show in his spare time and he's super fluid speaking and his English is great and his German's great. So we had him do some moderation for some of our sales kickoff, and it was terrific, amazing energy and stuff. But, you know, I had filed him away later for like, oh, we can use him on camera. So just keeping an open mind all the time when you're hearing people talk, presenting in meetings, like anyone who gets really engaged and is really animated and easy to listen to, file that away. Because if you need someone to talk about something, it's good if they're already comfortable with it rather than trying to shoehorn someone who hates speaking on camera into doing it. That's not very effective.
Yeah. So you have a kind of a running tab on the people who could be interesting to interview.
Oh yeah. You should see my OneNote. It's spectacular. It's all sorts of things about who's good on camera, who likes to write as well. You know, you get a really, you see people who host in the global channel, you know, and they're funny and interesting and they come in and they're the ones suggesting things to read. They're totally someone you should keep in the back of your mind if you need a blog post or something like that. So but if you've got a specific piece and you need to interview someone or a few people for it, the process I like to take is, first of all, have a really robust plan and brief written before you even go near them, because experts are amazing at making connections, but they're not always the connections you need for the thing you're working on. So if you go in there too open, you're unlikely to get what you need. That being said, have these little spaces for when they make connections that might be interesting, but at the same time, don't tell them about it, because otherwise they will leap off onto tangents and that will be not helpful. Be a little bit open, but quietly in the back of your mind. The other thing I do sometimes is I write the piece ahead of talking to my experts, including making up the quotes I'd like them to say. And then I reverse engineer the questions to get that answer. So it's not that I don't want them to tell me, but I want to know what would get me the thing that I need them to say. Because often you know what you're communicating anyway.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they will tell me something interesting and more in depth than what I have written necessarily, but that will get me much closer than making up really vague questions that they find difficult to answer. And especially if you're really looking to get specific and actionable information in your blog post or your white paper or whatever, this is an easier way to get it than trying to get them to come up with it. Again, they are not marketers. They don't know what would be the most useful content. That's your job. So having a bunch of these written from reverse engineering from my copy usually gets me closer. And then you can expand around that. My really sort of tip that I learned in journalism school was let them answer a question and then just sit there in silence and count to five in your head, because often they will say something else if you leave them for a sec.
Nice and one. Yeah.
Often you get some amazing pieces because then they've answered and then they think for a minute and they feel compelled to fill up the space, and then they'll say something else that can often be amazing, like some kind of thought that goes with it, or, you know, they've reconsidered something they've said, so they will say something else. It's really great.
Love that. Yeah, that's a great trick. And I can imagine that when you interview people, I mean, not all interviews go as smoothly as you want, right? So what are some of the roadblocks you have experienced with this process, and how can you overcome that?
Sometimes, particularly deep engineering folks, they are not always storytellers by nature. So sometimes you have to walk them down the path a little bit more and set out a story, or actively tell them, I need you to tell me a story about how this feature was helpful. Even then, you may only get two sentences, and that can be a challenge. Sometimes doing it in parts, they're not interested in talking to you, or they're really busy. So, and trying to get them into a meeting is impossible. You only have half an hour and they're not really concentrating. Like, I've had that one too. So sometimes, especially if it's internal, you can do a little bit of ghostwriting and sort of extrapolate about what they've said and then send it to them and say, I know this isn't everything exactly as you said it, but I know you're busy and I've expanded on it here. How do you feel about this? And often they'll change it and then you're good. So, you know, you have to be flexible. Not everyone is a think on their feet person. You can ask them, like, would you rather that I sent this via email and you can write it? Like, is that easier for you? Some people do find it easier, and that makes some people panic. So it depends. Sometimes I find it easier to do it in smaller chunks. So it's, I do a chunk and then we do a few questions. I write some stuff, I send it to them, and they are either okay with it or they want to expand on something, and they will either write it in there, or I say, well, how about we jump on a call and do another 20 minutes and then you can talk to me about this. And then we can add that in there. It's not the most efficient, but for some people, that's just how they think. So you have to be just a little bit flexible for how someone's thought process might work the best.
I think on LinkedIn, you hear a lot of marketers talking about our subject matter experts don't have time for interviews or to contribute or any problems in that nature.
I have so rarely found that to be the case. You know what I mean? Many organizations I've worked in, I've had to interview subject matter experts. And I think if you are targeted and focused and really have your questions organized and you tell them, I am doing this, I'm making this blog post, it's for this audience, it's for this awareness level, I've got 10 questions, let's talk through it, I rarely have trouble. So I think if you really show that you know what you're doing, and this is a like professional part of our marketing program, I mean, sure, if you walk in there vague and with no clear plan in mind and you want an hour of their time, like, they're not going to be into it. So you need to be as focused as they are.
Yeah, exactly. And we're seeing that with our clients as well. Just asking for 20 minutes even. And when you come prepared, most of them are super enthusiastic about doing an interview, right? Because for them, it's the easiest way to share their knowledge. It's the easiest way for you to help them. So, but I agree, the ask should not be too big, right? I mean, if you're asking for them to write like 1,000 word or 1,500 word piece, they probably don't have the time to do that. So that's why those interviews are like a great gateway to capture those insights and then for you to turn them into some good content.
I really do not ask my experts to write things outright for me because, again, they are not marketers and they're not copywriters. It just often is not the right tone of voice, and then I have to change it a lot, and that causes friction. And it's often, like you said, faster to just have a 20-minute interview and then do it and then write something from it than it is for them to agonize over 1,200 words only for you to edit loads of it and hurt their feelings, which is fair. So it's really just trying to figure out the best use of time. But I think it's worth practicing interviewing skills so that you are getting what you need and reviewing like how much of my interview was usable, what questions really worked for me, just looking up those basic journalistic interviewing things, like never say yes or no questions, don't ask more than one thing at a time, like keeping it really focused so you get what you need out of it. That will almost always get more interesting things out of the time than asking them to do, because you're kind of asking them to do a whole other job that they don't have the skill set for. So, I mean, it's crazy. It'd be like someone saying, can you just go and code this thing for me? It's like, I don't know how to do that, you know? So I understand when they look at me panicked. But if you say, can I just talk to you about this thing that you are working on? I want to hear about all the cool things you're doing. Everyone wants to do that.
Absolutely. Hey, let's talk about finding the right tone of voice for a second, because obviously that's an important part of that editorial mindset or the journalistic approach as well. How do you go about finding the right tone of voice for your content when you're already speaking to an expert audience?
The way we define it at S&P is really experts talking to experts. Often the kind of projects and work we're talking about is something that they can be a super experienced IT senior IT lead, but never have done before, like major SAP ERP migrations and things like that. Or we're talking about, you know, new technology things, cloud data integration, and things that they might just have not tackled yet. Again, I'm a big fan of imagining a scenario and then sort of thinking through the kind of conversation you'd have. So the way I often describe it is you meet someone in a similar role to you in a similar level at a conference, and you're working on different kinds of projects, but you're both really experienced and you recognize that. And you mention you're planning on doing this big data migration, and they say, oh yeah, we did that last year. And they're like, oh, I really didn't expect it, but this was the testing took forever and this is whatever. So this is the tone of voice you want, right? It's the like, they recognize that you are know what you're doing, but it's a let me level with you. This was the thing that I didn't expect, or this was easier than I thought it was going to be. And this is how we did it. Kind of, you're sharing tips with someone who's at the same level. Another way I talk about it sometimes is like, it's the same way you would talk about planning a holiday and you talk to someone who went there last year. And it's not like you've never gone on holiday before, you know how to do it. It's just you haven't been to that place and they have. So they're going to tell you about, don't stay at that hotel because it was super loud. And oh, we found this amazing restaurant. You know what I mean? It's that same kind of like, let me help you out, but let me share my knowledge kind of thing. So it's that same sort of peer-to-peer kind of, I respect your knowledge, but I just happen to have some that you don't have. So it's that kind of approach. So I try and sort of think about that before I write. That's what works for me.
I love that holiday analogy.
Yeah, I thought it was quite good. I was and I find that easier to explain sometimes to people who are not in marketing, because sometimes if you get too deep into the marketing talk, they zone out. Which is understandable.
Yeah, exactly. And I also know that it's a big company. So you guys are serving multiple personas at multiple levels, different industries, which is the case for many other companies and marketing teams that are listening in as well. Curious to hear, how are you ensuring like a consistent tone of voice when you're targeting multiple personas?
Really, the tone of voice doesn't change that much. It's more about what we talk about. So like when we're talking to C-level audience, you might focus on, like, for example, cloud data integration. You might focus on things like data democratization, better analytics with real-time updates so you can have a 360 degree of the organization like quickly and whenever you need it. But for a senior IT lead, you might be talking about like the ease of connection to different data sources, or like breaking down data silos so you can give the business what they need, managing large data volumes, because that level of granularity isn't really interesting for the higher level. So the tone of voice hasn't really changed, but it's more the subject matter. So because you can still have that peer-to-peer kind of tone of voice to talk about how important data democratization is or whatever, or silos between data sources and teams and things like that. So, I mean, it's really more about thinking about the elements they care about rather than changing the way that your tone of voice works.
That makes sense. And this is also exactly the reason why customer research is so important, right? Because for all these different personas, you need to come up with the topics that are actually relevant to them, not talking to CEOs about the latest engineering tricks or talking to engineers about the latest strategy hacks.
Exactly.
That doesn't work. But I'm still surprised to see how often that happens.
I think it can be a little bit of spray and pray approach where they, or senior folks or sales that don't want, sales teams not wanting you to be too specific. Some, I have had that in other organizations where if you start talking about targeting things, sales teams panic because they hear it will be irrelevant to everyone else and you're only, we're going to lose all this other stuff. It's like, no, it's not like they don't care. It's just that we are being specific to the things that this audience cares about. It's not like it is totally irrelevant and in another language for someone else. So sometimes there can be pressure to include all the messaging in everything, which of course we all know that doesn't really work, but I understand sometimes there can be a bit of writing by committee that happens depending on your organization, in which case you don't always get the final say. And yeah, so I understand.
Yeah. Been there, done that.
Yeah.
Hey, Erin, this was a super interesting conversation. I mean, we could talk about this stuff for hours. Thanks so much for your time. Really appreciate you sharing all these insights. And I'm sure that there are some really valuable nuggets of insights and practical tips that our audience can take away from this conversation. So thanks again and take care.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks so much for listening to this episode of B2B Marketing Done Right. I hope you got some valuable insights out of it. And if there's a specific topic that you would like me to cover on this podcast, just send me a message on LinkedIn. I would love to hear from you there. See you next week. Cheers.